it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to a sleepy edition of Advantage Connors. Here, as always, your host, Brett, Jimmy Connors. We're promising a short episode tonight. We're a little tired. How you doing up there in Santa Barbara?
Yeah, a little tired is right. Been busy all day doing a lot of running and, you know, trying to, you know, get through this atmospheric river that's, kind of hit California again the last 4 or 5 days. And a lot of rain, awful lot of rain we've had up here. And, when it rains, you know, what do? They close the tennis course. They close the golf course. Tough to go out and get my exercise when, with all this rain. But, kind of enjoyed the couple of days off. But, back to doing some running and had a busy day. So, yeah, a short one would be good. How about you? You've been working hard yourself.
Yeah, we've been T2 for a second straight week. We're in Rio. We're in Dubai, Doha. We're in Los Cabos. The action never stops on Tennis Channel and on T2. So we've had a good week, but we get in there early. So I'm a little burnt and ready for bed already. So we'll try and keep it short. But atmospheric river seems to be the newest buzzword. I think I hear it everywhere, but no one knows exactly what it means.
Well, we got atmospheric rivers. We've got El Nino. We've got La Nina. We've got, oh my God. But when we get rain here in California, we can use it. I mean, we've gone... We've lived in California, but for, I don't know, 40 years or so. And we've been through some heavy droughts too, where we haven't, sniffed a drop of rain. And, to get this kind of rain, we take it, we like it because it fills our lakes and our reservoirs and, really does a lot for California in general. But boy, oh boy, when it rains, they used to write songs, "It never rains in California." But I wish they were here now.
Right,
it's crazy. We're getting our fill of it, but everything's full, and it's going to be a beautiful spring.
Yeah, definitely. I always try and rush home from work if it's still raining, and get on the couch, crack the window so you can just hear the rain. I'm a big fan of just the noise and the water running, and it makes it easier to sleep at night. And I love it. So, but too much is too much when you're trying to get out there on the golf course. And one golf course where it didn't affect was at LA Open, the Genesis Open. Did you see any of this at Riviera over the weekend?
Oh, yeah.
It was a pretty fun Sunday finish. Did you watch it?
It's tough to get me away from the TV when, when it's been raining here, the courses are closed. And, if I can get my golf fix any way I can, I will. Especially watching, that tournament down at the Riviera, the course is such a beautiful course. And of course, back in the 90s, we had a senior tennis tour event there at Riviera, and, they welcomed us and, were so kind to us, playing on their tennis course, but they also made the course available to a lot of the players and our sponsors, to go out and play there and to know all the history and the great players that have, walk down the fairways there was pretty cool. And also the finish was pretty cool. I mean, there was some great golf and we talk about Hideki Matsuyama. He's a past Masters champion and coming from, I think he came from, five or six shots back, to win the event. And, to make that many birdies to shoot, I think he shot a 61 in the final round, you know, to shoot that kind of round at Riviera, you got to be playing some golf. And it's fun to watch him play. He's pretty cool. I like him. I like his game and, you know, his manner and the way he goes about his business. And yeah, fun to watch him play.
Yeah, definitely. We're big Hideki fans. I remember the Masters was one of the more exciting Masters we've seen in a while. And yeah, coming from behind, you know, on a classic course against some great players. Cantlay was up there. He kind of struggled on Sunday shooting one over. But yeah, and then that, the other thing, Matsuyama's caddy. You know, he had that classic moment after he finished 18 in at the Masters a few years ago where he went and he took the flag off. You know, like it's the tradition for the caddy to take the last flag, you know, and he takes it home, probably puts it on his wall, signs it or whatever. You know, he took the flag off, put it back into the hole and then did the bow. And then on Sunday, they showed a picture of him. And I think he was, because they were already in the clubhouse because they were so far back, they just showed a picture of him sitting there and he's just watching 18 and he's just sitting on the grass by himself and he's hitting his vape.
Oh, was he really? Yeah, he was chilling. Yeah, he was chilling. Hey, so, he had a rough day. His man shot 61. That's a rough day getting him through having a round like that. So,
right, having to bring him from behind. And then also I thought was a good story was Will Zalatoris, the young guy we've talked about before who's had some injury issues and also had to overcome, I think he had a close family member pass away suddenly on like Wednesday or Thursday before the tournament. So it was, you know, good to see him back, you know, up at the top playing some good golf.
Yeah, and you know what, that just goes to show, Brett, that, you know, he came back, I think he had back problems in 2023. And so, you know, he was out, I think he had surgery, and then he was out up until, you know, the beginning of this year. You know, he came back and, you know, he paid his dues. I mean, he, you know, struggled if he made the cut, you know, it was barely. And if not, then, you know, he was, you know, struggling to find his game. And then it just goes to show if you stay in there and you have that desire and you have that understanding that, you know, that I know I've been here before. I was playing great golf and just let me stick with it and stay with it and get your mind right, you know, because he not only, you know, had to be right physically, but also, you know, mentally to face that being out that long a time. Mm-hmm. And so it was good to see him, you know, come through. And I think he finished second and you know, play some really good golf. And I'm glad he's back. He's always fun to watch. And you know, he's going to bring some excitement to the tour. Happy to have him back.
Definitely. I think he will win a Grand Slam at some point. It's just a matter of when. You know, he's one of the cleanest ball strikers on tour. It's just the putter that seems to give him trouble sometime, but not this weekend. And if he can stay healthy and keep that back going, you know, I think he's going to be a threat the rest of the year. And one other note, you said that they were nice enough to let us play Riviera. You're right. When you had the senior tour when I was in high school, my friend who I was number one varsity on the golf team, and my buddy JC Levine, Justin Christopher Lavagnier, as we call him, was number
your
two.
Buddy.
Yep. And we were, you know, we're in the same grade and we were on the team, you know, all 4 years together. And when we heard that we had the chance to go play Riviera, we hopped in the old Volvo Love Mobile and headed south on the 101 and played 18 and had a blast doing it. I remember that like it was yesterday.
The old Volvo saw some sights. You know, it was, I think it made a trip around the country many times, you know, from California to Florida to, you know, back in Illinois. But, you know, it wasn't a bad ride for you at the very beginning. It was,
it had
a lot of miles on it, but it served you well.
Yep. I mean, I've come full circle. I drive a Volvo now. So, you know, it couldn't have been too bad. I came back.
safe and sound. Also, Brett, you know, over the course of the golf tournament, you know, Tiger was in the tournament. It's good to see him play, but you know, it's difficult. You know, we talk about it all the time in tennis, and I'm sure it's just as, if not even more difficult in golf, you know, to come out and just, you know, play occasionally, right. You know, and, you know, I know, you know, his problems, his physical problems and so forth. And, you know, and the older you get, the tougher it is anyway. But yeah, I mean, you know, that feeling, you know, that he probably, he always had from the very beginning, you know, the hard work and, you know, putting in the time and, you know, precision and, you know, the discipline and everything, you know, the older you get and you get those aches and pains and you feel like, oh, you know, sometimes it just, you know, hits you and, you know, and to go out and to, you know, face the best players in the world. You know, I know what it was like coming back from, you know, my wrist injury, playing the best players in the world, you know, right off the bat, and who have been primed. You know, they've been out playing and working and training and, you know, going through all that. And, you know, to jump in on that, pretty difficult. And I like it better when he's in there. I mean, every golf tournament is better when Tiger's in there, but they certainly have a lot of great young players that have come up that have kind of, you know, nobody's going to replace Tiger, but they certainly are filling the bill. You know, Victor Hovland's won, and Will Zalatoris has won, and Hideki only being, 30, 31 years old has won, and Pat Cantlay and Schauffele and, you know, Scottie Scheffler. And, you know, Christ, I know more golfers than I do tennis players. So I don't know. Is that a good thing? Might be a good thing.
Yeah. You know, I think it shows you that you consume more golf. But it's hard. I mean, the one thing, it was tough seeing him drive away in the cart. Remember, they're driving him on the cart and then they take him in an ambulance. You know, thank God he wasn't driving.
Right, exactly.
But, you know, it's tough because you never know. Like, is he playing this week because it's some sort of sponsor tie-in, like with Genesis or some deal he has? Like, does he really want to play? I mean, he always used to play at Riv. You know, it's a good course. He's had success there. But, like, golf's a fickle thing. Like, you can't just turn it on, turn it off. Oh, I play this week, turn it on. Like, you have to always be working on your game, always be working on your chipping and your putting and your short game. And then golf's so streaky. You know, like sometimes, you know, you'll be playing good. You don't want to stop playing. You know, you just want to keep playing every day. And then if you're playing bad, it's the same thing. We're like, you kind of want to keep playing every day so you can push through it and get through this.
Yeah, play yourself out of it. Right.
Right.
Exactly.
Play yourself out of it. So it's tough. You don't know like what restrictions his body has, you know, like, you know, makes me think of couples. Couples used to, you know, could win any time kind of thing, but his back didn't let him practice all the time. He could only hit balls for 30 minutes a day or like whatever it was. So you don't know what's going on with his body, and it's just tough to see. You don't like to see him, you know, having to, you know, pull out and get taken off the course like that.
Right. Well, you know, hopefully things work out. It's fun having him in there. And you know, I know when I was, you know, towards the end, I liked going out and putting my game, you know, up against the new fresh young players coming out and the way they played, you know, and it's fun to see, you know, Tiger, and, you know, because he's been around for what, 30 years or so, pretty close.
Yeah, pretty much.
And his game and the way he played, and, you know, and the changes that he's made to try to, you know, continue to go out there and compete, and, you know, how that stacks up against the great young fresh talent that's out there. And, you know, like I said, you know, all tournaments are better with Tiger in it. And you know, I hope he figures it out so that he can come out and, you know, kind of get stuck in some of these tournaments and make it fun. The last coming down the last nine on Sunday, be fun.
Yeah. Hopefully he's there at the Masters in Augusta in April, because, you know, that's one of the ones you really want to see him at. You're like, you don't mind not seeing him at some of the smaller events and save yourself for some of the big ones. But it's hard to do that. You got to get play in, you got to compete and, you know, test your game out, see where it's at.
I think he's been around long enough and knows how to go about that. So if anybody can do it, I'm sure he can.
That's true.
Yeah,
we'll see what happens the rest of the year. So let's get into some questions. You guys left us some good questions here. I don't want to keep you too long because I have a reservation with my pillow.
Yeah. And let me give a shout out to all our listeners, though, for all the great questions. I mean, the last couple of weeks, I mean, it's, you know, it's so much fun hearing from them and you know, what they want to know about, hear about. Talk about and the loyalty that they've showed us from the very beginning, Brett, pretty special. We've got a good crew out there and certainly happy that, you know, every week that we can talk to you about what you want to hear about too. And thanks for listening. Okay, go ahead.
Yep. All right, here we go. George Martinet, Jimmy, is there a boxer in the 70s or 80s or just all time who you would compare yourself to in terms of mental fortitude? I know you like that word.
I like that.
He said, very I'm thinking good. Roberto Duran in his prime as a lightweight. I see similarities. What do you think?
Wow. I like that. I had the pleasure of meeting Duran a couple times and of course watched a lot of his fights and they said he had hands of stone, and he did. I mean, he could unload it, but he could also take a punch. And, you know, watching, you know, that was more, you know, the heavyweights. I love the heavyweights with Ali and Frazier and Foreman and a lot of the greats. But you know, I liked, you know, the Durans and the Haglers and Tommy Hearns and Sugar Ray Leonard, you know, where the guys get in there and you know, they're throwing so many punches, you can't count them. They're throwing them so fast. And you know, that kind of action. And Duran would be a great comparison for me. And because, you know, a guy who's not afraid to get in there and mix it up, they all were, you know, Joe Frazier. Yeah, you know, I look at him and I say, "Crime, Netley, if I play tennis like that, oh my God, I don't know." You know, but that's a Nadal type too. You know, Joe just, you know, keep coming at you. You know, and you know, sometimes it didn't work out for him, but hey, what the hell? I mean, it was never dull when he was in the ring either. So, yeah, Duran, I'll take that. Yeah, instantly.
Yeah. It's a good little thought project too, because we always talk about tennis being, you know, boxing at 90 paces or whatever, and Pop being a boxer and teaching you and kind of training you like a boxer. So I thought it was a good question, and it's kind of fun to think about, like, all the different players, like who would be, you know, and
right,
that kind of stuff. So good question. All right, next, which player, Jimmy, did you hate to play the most as far as they were tough to play against?
Oh, right off the bat, I would say, and he was my good friend, Ilie Nastase. And the reason I say that is we were too good of friends, you know, and for me to go out and to play him, I had a very difficult time separating the two at the very beginning. He beat me a number of times in a row, I think like 8 times in a row at the beginning. And finally, your grandma, my mom, said, "Listen, if you don't step up and, you know, beat him, he's going to lose respect for you." And it was true. We used to have some great matches, but, you know, I got a few wins, you know, under my belt against him. And, you know, today we're still friends, but he was always difficult for me to play because he was so on top of it. I mean, not only with his game, but I mean, the way he anticipated, and he almost knew where I was going to hit the ball before I did. And he would be there, and, you know, and his style and his speed. And I mean, he was a very elegant player. And, you know, the more he did that, you know, the more pissed I would get playing him. But I love playing him because he always brought out the best in me. And I had to figure out something else to do out of the ordinary because he knew my game so well. So, yeah, he was the toughest one for me to play.
That's interesting too, right? Like you had to figure him out. And then once you knew you could figure him out, did that like help you? And if you dealt with that with other players, not necessarily that, you know, you were friends and that got in the way, but, you know, would you encounter somebody else who did a tactic or had a strategy that you're like, shit, like he beats me with this thing every time or the first couple times. And then you had to like kind of think about what you did with Nastase and like overcome that.
Well, you know, we were good friends, Brett, and you know, we played a lot of exhibitions together and we practiced a lot together. So
played doubles.
And played doubles together. Yes. So, you know, I got to, you know, a lot of people think that, you know, he wasn't, you know, the brainy type on the court, that he really wasn't. But I mean, because he was so natural and you know, his game came so easy to him. But I learned a lot from just kind of talking to him about tennis, you know, and playing and what it was like, you know, what he felt like under pressure and you know, how he handled that. Because, you know, he admittedly, you know, told me many times, I didn't handle that well. And you know, which made me think, well, if he's not handling that well, then maybe that's not the right way to do it. You know, so, right. You know, it kind of, you know, at a young age kind of veered me off of, you know, of a track maybe I might've been on and, you know, thinking about, you know, how I would handle things. But he was, you know, to get him to talk tennis, you know, he liked to talk about a lot of other things, but tennis. But, once in a while when he talked tennis, it was a good conversation and always fun with him.
Yep. Still need to get him on the show. So Nasty, if you're listening, anybody else out there is in touch. Get him on the pod with us. We need to talk some old school stories. I bet you guys have a few of them.
we could occupy an hour or so. It would be fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Next up, Russell Harris. What did you do to recover after especially physical matches? Like the 5-setter you played against Gomez in the US Open where you were cramping in the 5th set. What were the keys to recovery so you could be ready for your next match?
Yeah, I think I'm trying to think when that was. That was probably in the early 80s, I think, when I played Andres in that match. I was in good shape still then. I was young and I was really in good shape. But, you know, when you play a match like that, it does take a lot out of you. I'm trying to think if going in and getting an IV was in at that time. I think it might have started, you know, happening around that time because Bill Norris, who was the trainer, you know, for the tour, was pretty wise in all that and you know, what it would take, because, you know, you can sit there and you can try to rehydrate and, you know, water or, you know, sports drinks or whatever. But there's nothing like getting that IV, you know, and I did that, you know, towards the end in 91 when I was at the U.S. Open, also the French. And boy, I mean, you get that IV and 15 minutes later, you're rocking and rolling, ready to go. So, yeah, I mean, that to me would be the best way to, you know, kind of recuperate. Ice baths, I never did that. Massage, I wasn't good at that either. I like feeling, you know, my body and how I felt. And, you know, if I had an ache or pain, I liked knowing that. I didn't want to, you know, ever go out there and feel like, you know, I wasn't toned and tuned and ready to play, you know, the best tennis that I could. So, yeah, mostly
1981.
You know, 1981, that one.
7-6 in the fifth. Not bad.
Yeah. I mean, you know, listen, yeah, but 1981, I was a young guy.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, being in shape and being able to play matches like that, you know, I mean, I heard that from day one from, you know, from Paul, my grandpa, who, you know, who trained me. He said, you know, he says, when you're in shape, he says, nothing can stop you. And he was right. I mean, the only thing that could stop me was the other guy or me. So, you know, but being in shape and being able to handle that was, you know, that was, you know, probably one of the things I'm always most proud of, Brad, over all the years that I played is that I never went out and lost a match because I was tired. You know, I was able to play till the end. I might have lost, you know, I mean, you know, nobody wins all the time, but I never lost because I was tired. Yeah, you know, I was always able to, you know, give it everything I had until the last ball. And after that, I was good. So, yeah.
Nice. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for candidates isn't to search at all. So don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is the matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites. And that's according to a recent Indeed survey. The great thing about Indeed is that it makes it easy for me. Look, I'm not trying to make this complicated. If I need to hire somebody, I need help. And Indeed's the help that I need. The best part about Indeed is it has everything I need all in one place. I don't have to go looking around, searching for things all over the internet. Indeed's my one-stop shop. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And this is the best part, everybody. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your job more visibility at Indeed.com/Connors. Just go to Indeed.com/Connors right now and support our show, Advantage Connors, by saying you heard it here. It really helps us out a lot. Indeed.com/Connors. Terms and conditions apply. Do you need to hire? You need Indeed. Need to hire? You need Indeed. I like this one. Gene McKnight, what is your advice to any parent or coach regarding having a child, you know, young child, 8 to 12 years old, wanting to play a sport? Not everyone gets offered a scholarship or goes pro. So how many hours a day should they be willing to, you know, practice and put into the game?
Well, I think first of all, I mean, you know, don't let the parent want it more than the kid. Make sure that, you know, your son or your daughter, when they go out to play tennis or golf or baseball or basketball, that they're having fun doing it too. You know, and mm-hmm. because if you look back at it, Brett, there's only one number one, you know, but everybody... all you know, parents and coaches, they've all got those visions, you know, number one. There's only one of those, So make sure that they enjoy it, that they're having fun doing it, because when you do, then it's easier to work at it, you know, as opposed to going out with the wrong attitude and feeling that, you know, that it's, you're putting pressure on me, or, you know, you're pushing me too hard, or, you know, because, you know, if you're pushing too hard and you're the parent, you know, you're going to drive the kid away. And the worst part of that is, you know, they're going to end up hating you too. You know, so, I mean, there's a very fine line on not push. I'm not going to say push, but how to keep the player or the athlete interested. It's a very fine line. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'll go back to, you know, to my mom. I mean, she never pushed me 1 minute. If I wanted to go hang with the guys, I'd go hang with the guys. I'd go play basketball, I'd go play football, whatever. But I'd always come back to the tennis. And I was lucky because, you know, she, you know, was my pro. And, you know, if I wanted to go hit a few balls after dinner, she, you know, she'd go and hit a few balls with me. But I always came back to the tennis because I was never forced to play. She never gave me one opportunity to say, yeah, I don't want to play that old tennis. I don't want to do that. She never gave me an opportunity to say that. And I think that's what allowed me to play for so long.
One thing that always stands out to me about her that if I ever had a kid, I would teach too, is to always keep them like wanting more. You know, don't burn them out. Don't do it in, you know, run them into the ground with it, or, you know, make them exhausted. Make it so that they want to keep playing. And, you know, that if they want to keep playing, it's almost like, well, now's a good time to stop. You know, they've gotten their exercise in, they've gotten, you know, whatever you're working on, the, you know, tactics or training stuff. And then, you know, make it so that they're willing and ready to come back the next day. They're not looking at you like, oh man, we just did 3 hours of this yesterday. We got to go again. You know, that they're more like, oh, let's get back out there. I want to work on my forehand.
Right. But that's where everybody's different. No, you can't, it's very difficult. I say you can't, but it's very difficult to put every kid through the same regimen. Or the same workout program, the same exercise, the same drills, the same everything, because every athlete is different, you know. You said it right. That's what my mom always did. She kept me wanting more. That's why I only played for 45 minutes or an hour, because I gave it everything I had. And she would come out and she'd stop and she says, "You've had enough now." No, I want to play more. No, you can play more tomorrow. She wanted me to come back tomorrow and play again and give it that same effort every time. And you said there one word, which was two words, burnout. You know, to keep from burning out the athlete is very important. And that's why I say let them go out and make sure that they enjoy it and have fun doing what they're doing, because if they do, that just makes things a little easier.
Do you think that's one of the reasons you had such a long career? Because I think, you know, like a lot of people early in your career saw how hard you played, you know, tried to win every point and gave it everything you had. And a lot of people said, oh, that's not going to last. He's going to burn out. He's going to break down his body. Do you think that her instilling that mentality in you when you were young? Because like, I remember even when you were older, you wouldn't practice that long. You know, you'd do an hour. Sometimes if you saw something was messed up or you're not hitting something the way you like, sure, you might play another set or something. But like on average, you would do like about an hour, you know, do some other training away from the court. But do you think that helped your career, like, you know, last as long as it did?
Oh, yeah, I think definitely. And I think, you know, once I started and I turned pro, it was always, you know, you don't need to play 6 or 7 weeks in a row. If you go and you play right, you know, and you're getting your matches in and you're getting to the weekend, you know, and which means that I'd be in the semis or the finals or whatever, you know, play 2 weeks, you know, maybe play 3 weeks, but then get away from it and recuperate and rest your body and rest your mind and allow yourself to come back and be strong. You know, when you start playing again, you know, because, you know, sometimes, you know, you overdo it, especially if you're on a roll and you're playing good. The hardest thing to do is stop. We just talked about that a little earlier. But if you keep pushing sometimes, that's when you do get hurt, or that's when you do wear down, even though you're finding success. So, you know, there's a fine line. That's why I say every athlete, every tennis player, they cannot be all treated the same. Everybody has to be treated as their own individual. And that would be the key to having a great pro or a great coach, you know, that understands that. you know, that, hey, I got 10 kids, but, you know, one is not, you can't, I can't do with one that I do with six, or, you know, and how that works out. So that's a pretty tough thing to be able to pick up. But if, you know, if you're out there coaching the best players, you better, it better be on top of that.
Yeah. And it shows the importance of tailoring, you know, the, whatever you want to call it, the training to each individual player. You know, you can't, you know, I have a system, it's going to work for every player. It's like, no, it's not. You know, each player probably needs their own, you know, way of talking to them, the way of explaining them, the way, maybe they're visual learners, they're audio learners. You know, it just depends. Exactly. You know, you can't just try and, you know, square peg a round hole kind of thing with everybody. So
yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well said.
Here's a good one. See, do you remember this? Brian Abruzzi. At 1990 Wimbledon, John McEnroe lost in the first round to Derek Restaño. After that, you had a conversation with Mac and Bud Collins about you possibly coaching Mac. Mac actually asked you on air if you could coach him, and you agreed. Whatever happened with that?
Nothing.
just for the TV?
Yeah, anything else you want to know about that? Hey, you know, he was, you know, kind of thinning out his career too around that time. And you know, in 1990, you know, coming back and, you know,
we were working for NBC, remember?
Yeah, I was working for NBC.
You didn't work that. You didn't play that year. You had your wrist. So we were doing the TV for NBC.
Right. But, you know, Mac, you know, had gone on sabbaticals and, you know, taken 3 months off, 6 months off, and then tried to come back and, yeah, you know, kind of go through that. And, you know, like we were talking about earlier with the golf rat, that's hard to do.
Yeah.
You know, when the other guys are, you know, forging forward, you know, I always felt, you know, especially when I was out for that year, I took a year off, but I was really 2 years behind. You know, so, you know, you can't just come in and think that, oh, well, these guys are going to roll over. I'm John McEnroe, or I'm Bjorn Borg, or Jimmy Connors, or Pete Sampras, or whoever. I mean, you know, when these young kids, you know, that they want to start taking their place too, you know, and that's the way it was back in 1991. So, you know, when Mac said, you know, would I coach him? I said, yeah, sure, I'll do it. But, you know, as soon as that interview was over, I think we both ran the other way. that was funny that he even remembers that. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. What do you think about this question? I'm interested too in your answer. We've talked about it before, and I did his match the other day against Muller, who he beat in straights, and then he lost today to a young kid, Mincik, in three tiebreaks. Andy Murray, Lloyd Kimmen asked, Andy Murray kind of over, right? You know, when can he play the senior tour? And I don't know, like I'm torn on this one because I can see both sides of it. Like coming into yesterday or 2 days ago when he won the match, he had lost. He was 0-4 on the year. And I think he had lost like six matches in a row dating back to last year. But then when I watch his match, almost every match he plays in is pretty exciting. Like, and then look, I didn't work to today's match, but he three tiebreaks. So he loses and it's still probably some really good quality tennis. But I mean, he is taking a lot of losses, you know, he's going through the motions of, you know, traveling, getting to these places and, you know, gets a tough first round sometimes, loses, you know, moves on. And like, I love his fight. I love that he still goes about it. And, you know, and when you see him coming out of the corners, sometimes you see like, this guy's got a freaking metal hip, you know?
Yeah.
Like, remember one play we replayed it and he gets out of the corner and he almost stumbles and you're like, that, you know, it's probably because of his hip. And he still goes and chases down the drop shot, flicks the winner cross court, you know, to win the point. And you're like, in that moment, you see both the duality of it. You see like his bad hip is probably, you know, hurting his movement a little bit, or it's got to be hurting him, you know, but then at the same time, he wins the point, chases it down and wins the match, you know? So what are your thoughts on him still kind of going, you know, staying on tour, still going out there and playing, even though, you know, maybe his record isn't, you know, what we're used to seeing?
There's only one guy who's going to know when it's time for him to stop. And that's him. Yeah, you know, and because you got all these armchair quarterbacks sitting back saying, you know, he's too old, he's too this, he's not what he used to be. Well, you know, shit, the old gray mare ain't what she used to be. You know, right. everybody gets older and you know, but you remember him for all the great things that he did and the Wimbledons and Olympics
medal.
And things like that, and let him worry about how he wants to go out. You know, if he's still enjoying it, he doesn't mind the travel and, you know, and you know, the aches and pains afterwards that you know, that all entails. You know, and that just doesn't mean on the court. That means the travel, and that means everything that goes into it. You know, there's only one guy that's going to say, you know, say to him, "Don't you think you've had enough?" And then some, you know, one day he'll listen to himself.
Right.
You know, but until that day, everybody just shut up. You know, let the guy have, you know, I mean, he put enough time in. He put his time in. You know, let him go out and enjoy what he wants to do. And listen, if he's still winning, you know, going 7-6 in the third set, you know, that doesn't mean that he's not competing.
Right.
You know, I mean, he's in the matches, he's digging and playing. And you said it. I mean, you know, there's nothing like going out there and knowing that you've done everything that you could do along the way. And you still got the crowd behind you.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty cool. And let him enjoy that.
Yeah.
You know, who knows how long he's going to play. But in the meantime, you know, he's having fun. Why don't you have fun along with him?
Right.
Enjoy it.
Yeah, I agree. Like, I low key, like this, not exactly this last part, but him coming back after the hip might be part of my favorite Murray time. You know, just because, like, wait, he's got a metal hip? You know, like that's like unheard of, like in sports, you know, and like obviously modern medicine's probably made advancements and stuff. But like, geez, you've had 3 hip surgeries, you know, obviously when you were older than him. But the fact that he's just out there competing against guys that are 15, you know, even 20 years younger than him almost is crazy. And I remember as you got older, being with you and you having conversations with, you know, us and friends and you going like, "Fuck, if I was just a few years younger, I'd beat these guys' ass."
You know? Yeah.
And so like, I can just picture him walking off the court today after the loss going like, "If I had both my fucking hips, that would have been a straight set win." You know what I mean?
Yep.
It's hard to like take that away from a guy who's, you know, like you say, he's given so much to the sport, been such a competitor. And even his matches when he loses, like today, it's an exciting match. 3 tie breaks. It was over 3 hours long against a new young Czech, you know, up and coming 18-year-old player who people have been talking about. Now we have that match to reference, you know, like
right.
For the rest of the, hey, remember when Murray played this kid, and this kid, who knows what he's going to become in his career. So yeah, I'm down for like just letting him do what he wants to do.
I mean, you know, I know he's got a fake hip. Tennis is all about the movement. You can see that. I mean, everybody hits the ball great. Right. I mean,
yeah.
You know, but the movement and the way, you know, the getting to the ball and, you know, being able to run down shots and getting back in position, you know, and you know, just the, you know, the whole thing, you know, running 10 yards and then sprinting back 10 yards. And then, you know, and just the total movement that you go through over the course of a, you know, 2-3-4 hour match on a tennis court is amazing. You know, and I remember when, you know, talking to you when he first had his hip done, I couldn't believe it.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't. I mean, I know I was older when I had mine done, but there was no way I wanted to go back and do that.
Yeah.
You know, after I was saying, geez, I hope I can walk up to the gate and back, and be able to, you know, just kind of, you know, walk through a normal life, you know, which I'm able to do. But I never, ever thought I'd go out and play tennis like that at that level.
Right.
You know, so, you know, what an accomplishment that is. I mean, you know, that might be his biggest accomplishment,
right.
You know, out of all the great things that he did on the court, that he's able to play with, you know, with a metal hip. Amazing stuff.
Yeah. And he could have easily used that as an excuse to just walk away. Like no one would have been like, "Oh, Mo, you know, why did he leave early?" Or he could have left something on the table. No one would have said a thing, knowing he had to have, you know, reconstructed.
Yeah, but you see, that's where people are crazy. You know, if he'd have walked away, they'd have said, "Well, he left something on there." You know what? How do we know? Maybe he could have done it. But now that he's playing, they're saying maybe he's playing too long. Maybe he should have stopped.
Right. Right.
Know, so.
It's always some shit.
Always something. Always something is right.
Okay, 2 more quick questions, and then I'll get you out of here. This is like a combo question. It's a mix of a few things I saw, but people are asking about Alcaraz. Carlos had to pull out yesterday of his match. We're recording this Wednesday. It comes out Friday, so a little dated, but twisted an ankle early in the first set, pulled the ripcord and withdrew. So it has now been since Cincinnati in August before the US Open when he made his last final.
Mm-hmm.
And so for the talk of the summer when we had it, you know, when he beat Joker at Wimbledon, it's now the Alcaraz era, you know, Djokovic is done, blah, blah, blah. Obviously that wasn't right. You know, Alcaraz has had some injury stuff, but you know, now it's been a little while since he's made a final And, you know, also in that time, Mr. Yannick Sinner has kind of like turned it on now and become a different player than he was, you know, last summer, capturing Australia in his first Grand Slam, also won in Rotterdam last week, pretty convincingly, looking, you know, really, really good. So now the landscape has changed a little bit where we're all looking like, well, is it the Sinner era now?
Geez, I remember when somebody asked how many Grand Slams Alcaraz would win, and I don't know, they were up in the 30s and all that, and I'm going, you know, they're not as easy to win as you think, you know. Right. So, you know, and another thing, you know, I mean, he's very young when he won the U.S. Open last year, or actually in 2022, and then he won Wimbledon in 2023. So, you know, at a very young age, he's had some pretty damn good success. But along with that has come some injuries, which we know about. And also, you know, I think, you know, some of the players, you know, have realized just how to play him or how he plays and, you know, what he did so well at the beginning that, you know, kind of caught them off guard. Maybe they have caught on to that a little bit, you know, so, you know, maybe he needs to, you know, change up a little bit and try to figure out something else. You know, it's not a big move. It's just, you know, little tiny little scratches along the way that maybe, you know, he can change to, you know, kind of offset his opponent a little bit. But hey, you know, I would like to be 20 or 21 years old to have had his success and still have 15, 16, 17 years more to play.
Right.
You know, even though he might be going through a little bit of a downtime, you know, but you can see he enjoys the game and he works hard at the game. And to continue to be at the top of the game, he's going to have to stay with that. You know, the you know, Sinner's coming up and there's a lot of the Aruna and there's a lot of these guys now that, you know, see that Federer is gone and Nadal, you know, might wait through the French and, you know, play the Olympics and who knows what happens. You know, Joker, you know, as great as he's played and still playing, you know, not getting any younger, you know, so all these kids are trying to say, you know, okay, you know, this could be me now, could be my turn now. And they're starting to play like it and they're going to make it nothing but tougher for each other because that's their era. Alcaraz and Runa and Sinner. And that's, you know, they're going to play each other for the next 10, 12, 15 years. And, you know, which is, you know, that's a lot of matches to play. I know I played Borg a lot. I played Mack a lot. I played Lindell a lot. And each time, if you go out and only do what you think you do best, which is what everybody knows anyway, not going to do that. Not going to work. You got to switch up some things and try to catch your opponent off guard. And he's young enough that he can do that. So I'll be looking for that over the course of this year.
Yeah, interesting to see for the clay. I mean, he turns 21 in May 5th. So still super young, younger than Sinner. Perspective's a funny thing, right? Like where he's just kind of going through his career, how he is. He gets up, practices, plays tournaments, wins, gets hurt, whatever it is. And then the perspective is the thing that's changed around him. You know, two or 3 years ago, he snuck up and he was this phenom. And then he started, you know, winning some smaller tournaments. And then 2022, he wins the US Open. Last year, Wimbledon, you know, he's won a lot of big events now. And so like, he's still just going through, he's not even 21. You know what I mean? But like now all of us start talking, oh, is the old era over? Or is this the new era? Is he the guy? Yes, he is the guy. Like we're the ones saying all that, putting all that out there into the, you know, to the sphere. And he's just like, hey man, I'm playing. Like, hey, I tweaked my ankle. I had to pull out. You know what I mean? It's just like, he's just doing what he's doing. And it's just like, it's all the noise around him that is constantly changing. And to think that they, you know, he's 20, they're going to have another 10, 12, 15 year career ahead of him. You know, like just think of all the little ebb and flows of life where like you're going to be hot for a while and then you dip down and then you get hurt or then you have some private life stuff or, you know, whatever it is, you know, there's going to be a lot of this. You know, he's not going to dominate always forever. You know, that's just not how it works.
But the fight back is the most fun, you know, because that's when you can really stick it to all those, you know, experts that are sitting there doing all the talking. If you know what I mean.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you come back and you know, you have a tough time. You go through a tough time. You lose a few matches. You don't win a Grand Slam for a couple of years, you know, or a year, whatever it will be. And then all of a sudden, boom, you know, you pop up and, you know, you win Australia, the French and Wimbledon. So you're going for the Grand Slam at the U.S. Open. You never know what can happen, but that's the most fun. You know, when you come back and you can sit down and say, I remember that guy. He wrote me off 3 years ago. I got something for you. Can you see that?
Right.
You want me to turn that up for you?
Right.
You know, so that's a crazy attitude to have. A lot of guys, you know, don't have that attitude. Yeah. You know, that they're willing to stay in there. They're saying, well, you know, I had a good run. Boy, I had a good run. I live off of that for, you know, guys have lived off of less for a lot longer, I'll tell you. You know,
right.
So, but I don't expect that from him, Brad. I think that, you know, he'll get his game in order. He'll get himself in order. And his splash time over the course of this year is still coming. I mean, he's going to, you know, make some waves coming up here pretty soon. I'm going to be watching for that. It'd be fun to see.
Definitely. I mean, yeah, I miss just having him in there, you know, like he ended up going to the Golden Swing. It would have been cool to see if he played Rotterdam with Sinner in the same tournament. Interesting now, they both have 12 career titles. So I just thought that was, you know, kind of random. But yeah, he'll be fine. He's got so much time. And it's just, you know, it's like we look at him like he was wrong, where it's like, well, we were the ones saying, like, it's the era, it starts now and this and that. So it's like we were the ones that were wrong. You know, like the were the ones who were saying all these things. It's like he's just doing what he does. He's just going about his tennis and you know, trying to get better. And I'm sure the results will come. I mean, he gets on the clay soon and, you know, he loves playing on that. And he said,
yeah, but all that can get in your head too, though, bud, you know. You know, guys are, you know, well, people sitting back and saying, you know, that he's out doing what he's doing and just, you know, and everybody sitting back saying, well, you should be winning. You should be, you know, but that stuff can get in your head too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that, and all of a sudden say, well, you know, what's happened to me? You know, all of a sudden your thoughts go negative, because you're not getting all that positive feedback, you know, from, you know, not just from your camp itself, but also from the outside. Mm-hmm. You know, so all of a sudden you know, some self-doubt might stick in there and sometimes the mind overtakes the body and doesn't let you have the free flowing game, you know, that got you to this point, you know, so he's going to have to kind of guard against that. You know, I was always told, you know, don't listen to what they have to say either, you know, how they want you to play or what they think about your career or why aren't you winning a Grand Slam, or don't listen to anybody. Only listen, you know, to those who really care about you. And he's going to have to dig in that too and figure that out.
I think he will. I mean, he seems like he really like loves the game. You know what I mean? Like he seems like he has fun out there. He smiles a lot. He loves competing. And, you know, I don't think he'll let that bother him. I think he's just got to, you know, get physically right and, you know, just get some more match play in. He'll be good.
Yep. I'm with you. I'll go one more question if you got one.
One more. This is the best one. David Isaacson, what was your favorite place to eat at all the majors? And no, you can't say the Playboy Club.
Oh, well, yikes. Let's see. Australia. I mean, it's been so long since I've been to Australia that...
That restaurant at the Crown we went to.
Modern day Australia, right?
I mean, just whenever.
Modern day, you know, in the hotel, the Japanese restaurant that we went to right there in the hotel was amazing.
Yeah.
You know, I could, and that's my favorite food anyway. I could eat that every night. In Paris, I stayed at the Plaza Antony, and they had two great little restaurants literally right around the corner from us. And you know, we'd walk out and we'd be there in a minute, and, you know, the food was great. The people there, they got to know us and were, you know, very friendly and loved going in there and, you know, hanging with them and the food was amazing too. So, I would say there in Paris, in London, room service and Trader Vic's, which is
Trader Vic's around the corner there,
right around the corner
from the Inn on the Park.
Yes. Yeah. It stayed at the Inn on the Park. And I think that's a Four Seasons now, but, it was right on Hyde Park corner and literally and right around the corner from the Hard Rock Cafe. You know,
that was a good runner up. We would get pig sandwiches to go, which was a barbecued pork sandwich with some fries. I remember we would pick those up many a night on the way home.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. And then Trader Vic's, was always, wasn't in second place. They were tied for first, both of them. I mean, that was, nice. It was right there on the corner. And then boy, at the US Open,
Where's the spot we would go to out by Flushing that we would go to? It was like,
it was a great Italian restaurant, and I can't ever remember the name of it, but it was amazing. It was like 10 minutes from Flushing, and the food was amazing. But, you know, in New York, I mean, by mistake, you go into a restaurant and it's great. But, you know, back then, I like going to the Palm in New York, and that was one of Pancho's favorite places. So we would go there a lot. And then, right around the corner or a couple blocks away, there was another good Japanese restaurant that I like to go to. And so I kind of stayed close to the hotel. I didn't need to get in and drive and go through a big ordeal for having a dinner. But I picked out a lot of great places, and basically back then, Brad, I could eat anything. You know, my metabolism was so good, I could eat anything and still be okay. But boy, has that changed?
Well, was the Japanese place the place we'd get shabu shabu?
Jesus, you got a good memory. That's exactly right. And we walked in and it was down a flight of stairs.
Underneath. Yeah, right. It was like under the street. You could like look up and see people walking.
Shabu shabu. That's my favorite. Say that and, too much. That Japanese is my favorite, but I loved it.
And the runner up was the deli on the backside of the hotel that had the best turkey sandwiches. These things were thick as like your head. You go get turkey lettuce and just light mayo on some sourdough toast. And we get chips with it and we get those and boom, we'd be good for the day too.
You're making me hungry.
I know, me too. It's a good time to stop the episode and go eat and get in bed.
Sounds good. It's been fun, bud. And the questions as always have been great. And just to remind all our listeners, you can follow me at Jimmy Connors on Twitter and Brett at Brett_Connors on Twitter. Also, keep the questions coming at ADV Connors and my Facebook. So, yeah, spend some time with us. We love being with you. And as always, Brett, love being with you and talking about just everything, just like we did tonight.
Yep, I had fun. And go get some rest. Tell Mom hi. And we'll check in with everybody next week. Peace.
Seeking the truth never gets old. Introducing June's Journey, the free-to-play mobile game that will immerse you in a thrilling murder mystery. Join June Parker as she uncovers hidden objects and clues to solve her sister's death in a beautifully illustrated world set in the roaring 20s. With new chapters added every week, the excitement never ends. Download June's Journey now on your Android or iOS device, or play on PC through Facebook Games.